Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. It's a gorgeous day today in Texas. Today I welcome a senior meditation teacher at the Spirit Rock Meditation Center in California. He's an executive coach, also the founder of the Mindfulness Institute, as well as the author of Make Peace with Your Mind, How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Free You from Your Inner Critic. Mark Coleman also leads wilderness meditation retreats from Alaska to Peru through his organization Awake in the Wild. And he's written a book of the same name on that subject. So it's a great pleasure to welcome Mark Coleman to today's show. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
You know, there's a lovely quote from Virginia Woolf at the beginning of the book that says, I work early in the morning before my nasty critic gets up. He rises about noon, and by then I've put in much of a day's work. And I like that quote because I think that's the thing, isn't it? Our inner critic, it seems to me, is a learned response to life, and the work is to get back to the sort of natural loving being that we are before the critic arises. So do you agree with that?
Yeah, I certainly think that the critic is, you know, a major interference to our well-being and has a very distorted perspective on who we are and our goodness and our true nature. And so it's important that we learn how to see it and recognize it and learn to find freedom from it. Otherwise, we will be taunted by that voice that's always oriented towards our faults and problems and deficiencies, which is a very unhappy way to live.
And I guess maybe it's because we're learning to navigate through, you know, a seemingly dualistic world that the critic is created, because it's part of, you know, a necessary evil, if you like, of having to deal with, you know, everyday reality and forgetting our inherent oneness. In unity, we, of course, say that we are, you know, inherently one, that our nature is pure and unalloyed, you know, our true nature. We always have a choice, and your first chapter, of course, is about that, right? That this is the great gift that we have, the change is possible. We're not stuck with this critic.
Exactly. You know, I mean, that's the good news from neuroscience, is that, you know, it's really been quite proven how our brain is very malleable and plastic, and in that plasticity we can change and develop and shift the habits and the orientation of ourselves and our brain through what we do, through how what we pay attention to, through what we focus on. And very much true with the negative habit of the critic, that, you know, although we inherit that, we develop it early childhood, and we may have strengthened it for a long time in our lives, you know, in every moment we have the choice, the potential to make a different choice and to find a more constructive, healthy, positive orientation rather than looking through what I regard as a very distorted negative lens of the critic.
Right. You know, there's been a lot of work lately in spiritual circles and in psychological circles to talk about the danger of bypassing, you know, whether it be spiritual bypassing, psychological bypassing. In other words, getting to the solution without really dealing with the difficulty, you know, rather, you know, trying to ignore it almost. And I think we've been bad in Unity about that sometimes because we want to put a positive gloss on everything. And I'm comforted to see many books now coming out, you know, that look at the shadow and look at the seeming difficulty as actually, you know, part of the journey. You know, the losing it is to find it, so to speak. And that it's not a problem unless we, you know, wish to label it that. And you have a chapter, you know, in regard to the good aspects of the critic, right? The critic is not all bad here.
Yeah, there's, you know, I don't think there's anything in nature that doesn't have a reason to be here. And, you know, and the critic is certainly, you know, it's a part of our mind, it's a part of our psyche. And, you know, we develop an inner critic in early infancy because we need to be able to fit in to our family and culture and society that we're born into. And so the critic is a way of sort of taming ourselves and our, you know, passions and impulses so we can actually maximize the flow of love and affection from our parents and loved ones. And so in that sense, it was originally, you know, it was a self-protective mechanism. And when it arises now, you know, many years after we've left home, we no longer need such a strong voice. It generally arises because it's triggered by vulnerability. You know, say we're late for a meeting, we've let someone down, we forget something. The critic will no doubt rev up. Because it's trying to protect us from that same vulnerability. The problem with the critic is it's sort of an outmoded piece of software that doesn't serve us so much anymore, in the sense that rather than judging ourselves and berating ourselves for something we've done wrong or a mistake or you know, a substandard, you know, action or conversation or performance, you know, the critic will be very, you know, critical and judgmental in a way that actually causes us to contract and feel deficient and less and unworthy and bad, which doesn't actually lead to very effective clarity or action. So that's why I talk about the need to look at the critic to see the different ways that it's operating and how it's impacting us, and to see how we can find more constructive, healthy, objective ways of, say, evaluating. Like there's a chapter in the book called Making the Difference Between Evaluation and Judgment. You know, we all need to discern and you know, to make decisions. We need to assess. We need to discriminate and evaluate. And they're healthy functions of the mind. The critic comes in and says, well, that was stupid. Well, that was ridiculous. Or you're a failure. And so that it thwarts the capacity to see clearly and to make effective change, because all the net effect of the critic is we tend to collapse and feel bad or unworthy.
Yes, seems to me the critic is always a step behind, right? It's there's the action, and then there's the critical response or reaction to that action, and so therefore it tells you something about the critic. You know, the critic is not the creative part of us. It's that part which, you know, views what's happening and then begins to make some judgment around it. In that sense, it's sad in a way, isn't it? It's a sad little thing that it has to always be critiquing things that we're trying to do. But there's a great quote here on page 47. It says, nevertheless, the critic can be a rich mine to probe for answers about the origins of certain thoughts, views, judgments, and reactions. A useful line of inquiry when any judgment is happening is to ask, what is really going on here? It is important to ascertain the actual data. What are the facts of the situation? It is also then helpful to probe for what may be going on at a deeper level. What might the critic be reacting to and trying misguidedly to define against or attack? And I love that ability to look without with a certain discernment, right? With a certain detachment, if you like, about our own, the things that may be kind of tender for us, but to be able to look at that without taking it personally, that's quite a skill, but I think it yields great benefits.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, the reason why, you know, the subtitle of the book is How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Help Free You from the Critic. You know, mindfulness is really the key skill here, right? We need a lot of awareness, which helps build that, you know, clarity of self-awareness. We need to understand our mind, our thoughts, our reactions. We need to understand why the critic gets triggered in the first place. And so we need quite a lot of subtlety to see the range and scope of the critic and why it's doing and saying what it's doing. And so the more we cultivate this mindful attention that allows us to know ourselves and our mind and our heart, then the more likely we're able to discern when the critic is operating, when it's, you know, and how to effectively counteract it.
Right. And we're obsessed with critics, aren't we? You know, even in common parlance, I mean, we're talking about the critics of movies. You know, we always go to Rotten Tomatoes or whatever it is and see what they're saying about a movie, you know. And although we hate critics in a way, we're sort of dependent upon them. And there's a great quote by Charles Schwab at the beginning of the chapter on From Judgment to Discernment that really struck me, because being a minister, you get a lot of things projected on you, you know, because they set you up as perfect and then they find out you're not. And I'm sure it's not limited to ministers, but it is a particular career problem, I think, for those that serve in especially a religious setting. And I love the quote from Charles Schwab. He says, I've yet to find the man, however exalted his station, who did not do better work and put forth greater effort under a spirit of approval than under a spirit of criticism. Wow, and that, you know, this is a huge topic in terms of what's happening in America at the moment. You know, is how do we respond to our leaders? How do we treat, for instance, you know, President Trump? Because many people would love to tear him down. In fact, they are tearing him down. And then the opposite is, you know, there's a huge defense going on to protect him, and the truth lies, you know, somewhere in the middle, right? But I love this quote, because I think we forget sometimes that to approve, there's a power to that, not just to enable, right? There's a difference.
Yeah, you know, and certainly it's been very interesting for me in terms of, you know, releasing this book. You know, came out like a few weeks before the election, and right. You know, we've been through this time in history in the last year. You know, one of the most divisive, negative, critical, judgmental election cycles that any of us can remember. And, you know, I think it speaks to partly this point that there's a chapter in the book called The Swing Door of the Critic, and the critic goes inward and it goes outward. So if we spend a lot of time judging ourselves, guess what? We judge other people. And if we judge other people, we will no doubt, when we get home, judge ourselves. And so I think, you know, the lesson from one of the many lessons from the election is we see the negative fallout from the judgmental mind writ large in society and in politics. And we're seeing the, you know, the negative impact on that, because we see how other people are mimicking that same judgmental, reactive behavior. And, you know, it's very unhealthy and leads to a lot of pain.
Right. And what's so particularly disturbing, I think, is the fact that the tools by which we discern are being subverted too. For instance, the press, you know, or the media, which is supposed to be there as a sort of a watchdog, if you like, of all the activities, is now being called into question itself. So, you know, now you have alternative viewpoints and news and whatnot. and fake news and this, that, and the other, and arguing about how many people were in the crowd and all this, which, you know, very much 1984-esque, isn't it? It's nothing makes sense anymore. We really have gone down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, no, we're definitely living in strange times. I gave a talk last night called, you know, in Buddhism, there's a understanding that, you know, everything has to be integrated into a wise spiritual life, just as I'm sure in Unity teachings. And one of those key areas is in speech. So I gave a talk entitled Why Speech and Alternative Facts. You know, we're living in this era where even the notion alternative facts is a concept, and it's very bizarre. And again, that's, you know, going back to that chapter that you mentioned, the difference between discernment and judgment, it's very essential that we maintain our capacity to discern, to see clearly, to, you know, scrutinize whether it's, you know, what politicians are saying or what anybody is saying. It's a very healthy faculty of the mind. And then when it slips into judgment, which is basically attacking the person, oneself or another, then we move into, you know, and then that's certainly been seen quite evidently with the new president, very, you know, personally attacking people. It's a very different form of analysis than actually assessing someone's actions and behavior. And it's, you know, of course, having a very negative impact on all of us, on many of us.
And yet, you know, the very fact that this sort of egregious behavior is happening from the very people we lift up as our leaders causes us all to really look, doesn't it, and examine our own responses here and our own wise discernment. So in a sense, it's broken open things. There's a dam that's burst, you know, almost, that causes you to really look in a way that we haven't before. And maybe that can be a good thing, you know, even though it's very discomforting to live through this, you know, maybe there are good things within it. That's my hope, at least.
Well, certainly, I think the march, you know, 2.9 million people marching around the world on Saturday in defense of, you know, justice and non-discrimination and non-bullying and all those kinds of things. I think that was very heartening to see that, you know, as much as there's a lot of things where pretty scary happening on Capitol Hill these days, there's also this tremendous goodwill and compassion and heartfulness that people are expressing in very beautiful ways, that and committing to values that we also hold very dearly, of kindness and compassion and equality and fairness and justice. So I'm very heartened by that wave that's happening, you know, all over the country and all over the world. In response to this contraction and tribalism and fear and, you know, a lot of negativity.
Well, and it seems, you know, very clear that there's two Americas right now and two worlds, really. I mean, because I think this is happening throughout Europe. We're experiencing it in Britain and France and other parts of Europe. The same kind of tendency to, you know, towards patriotism and tribalism on the one hand, and towards a very different vision on the other, and you know, there's a stark contrast between the two, it seems.
Yes, no, it's you know, I think the election and what's happening in Europe with Brexit, and you know, there's a poultice going on. There's a reaction to events of the recent years, and sadly becoming very divisive and polarized, and you know, but I think this has been throughout the course of human history, the forces that have championed the rights of the poor and the oppressed, and, you know, looking at, you know, whether it's Jesus or the Buddha or, you know, most spiritual teachers, and that we look back to you know, expressing that same need to take care of the vulnerable and the needy and the poor and the underserved. And I think it's important for us as teachers and ministers in this role in the church to, you know, to make sure that those values are really stay true to. yes. in the face of, you know, what I regard as fear and negative contracted thinking and beliefs.
And I think an interesting aspect of this is that, you know, for those on the one side, it seems that everybody's thinking this. And for those on the other, likewise, they think that everybody thinks their way. And, of course, that's always a tendency to you group with people that, you know, think like you do. But, you know, I think it's astounded people. For instance, I was in Britain a few weeks before the Brexit vote, and everybody thought it was going to go the other way, and it was going to be 48-52 the other way. We're going to stay in. And so when it shifted, it was, you know, surprising to many people, I think. And I didn't sense it when I was there that Britain was going to leave. And I think it's the same here in the States. You know, I think many people, even up in the last few days before the election, thought, well, you know, there's no way he's going to be able to pull this off. You know, Hillary is too strong. And yet, you know, when it happened, it was very much like Brexit. It was, you know, the total opposite of that. So interesting times, because I think we're firm in our beliefs, you know, and I can't imagine that the other side could. Again, I can't believe it still. When you, like you say, 2.9 million people throughout the world, you know, turned out. More people turned out on Saturday in Washington than for the inauguration, and yet, you know, we have this president who seems to not reflect the majority, because it certainly didn't win the popular vote.
Right.
So. There's a book called Ireland by Aldous Huxley. I don't know if you've read it, but it's one of his later books. And they're stranded on this island, and the parrots, it's a sort of a spiritual island where the people are helped to awaken in subtle ways. And the parrots on the island have been taught to parrot two words. So the two words they've been taught are attention and compassion. And and so wherever they go on the islands, you know, the people who are going through the spiritual tests or whatever, they keep hearing attention and compassion as the parrots pass by. And I thought, you know, your two words are, you know, awareness, mindful awareness and compassion, which are really the same thing, isn't it? Being attentive to the now, to what's going on at any moment. And then to apply, you know, expand into compassion from that. So always loved that novel, because I thought that's the key element to two elements of the spiritual path, really, being present to what is, you know, to be aware, and then to expand into, you know, to understand that our awareness is without boundary. It's spacious and enveloping, and its nature is compassion.
Right, right. And they really are, you know, in the tradition that I'm trained in, it's, you know, we talk about them as being two wings of a bird, and they really are, you know, essential for life, essential for spiritual life. And, you know, I think as the world is needing them more than ever, we need more awareness, we need more clarity and discernment, and we also need a lot more compassion. You know, the suffering is not going away, whether it's, you know, around disasters or around poverty or racism, or you know, there's a lot of suffering in the world, and what's being asked is how do we meet that? Can we meet that with care and compassion and kindness? And the same with our inner world, you know, and it's, when we're dealing with the critic, you know, we need that clarity of awareness, but we also need compassion, because it's so painful. You know, when we listen to that voice, you know, we talk to ourselves in ways that we would never talk to another person. We're much harder, crueler, critical, judgmental. And when we can learn to bring a quality of kindness to ourselves, you know, one, it allows that pain to be held in a certain way. And then another time, sometimes also that love can manifest as fierceness and as a self-protection and as a saying no to that voice that's so harmful and judgmental. So both qualities are very important.
Right. I must admit, I laughed out loud this morning when I read that you've got a chapter on humor, which in Unity, especially in our church, we love to laugh. We don't usually laugh at jokes. We laugh at the human condition, you know, and how crazy we all are. But I love this comic strip where the one caption says, "Think of all the people you regularly disappoint." I love it. And then the other one is, Where was it? Relive embarrassing and awful moments that occurred years ago. I'm good at that. I'm driving down the road sometimes on the way to work, reliving events that happened, you know, when I was 18 and trying to crawl under the proverbial carpet. But I think, you know, putting a statement out like that, you know, because we're used to the pablum of, you know, feel good and you know, I'm worthy and all that sort of stuff. And it kind of slips like water off a duck's back sometimes, but to laugh at our own insecurities and stupidities, you know, think of all the people you regularly disappoint. That particularly gets me for some reason.
Right.
It's so freeing, isn't it? You know?
Right. Right. And I usually add after that line, think of all the people you regularly disappoint. And I add, especially people who share your last name, your last surname.
there we go.
You know, so often, you know, we're letting down, you know, our siblings and our parents or our children or somebody. And, you know, and it's amazing that the mind, we have these amazing minds that can, you know, envision, you know, spaceships that fly to Mars and great art and beauty. And we also have these minds that are a little crazy and tyrannical and do things like think about the people you regularly disappoint or compare yourself unfavorably to other people. And we kind of torture ourselves with our mental habits that are very pervasive and persistent. And then again, unless we bring some awareness to that, we just keep causing ourselves a lot of unnecessary hardship. And so that's why, you know, we bring that awareness to the critic. We see, wow, I'm really hard on myself. I'm critical. I'm unforgiving. I'm, you know, and fill in the blanks. And, you know, and it's good to have a sense of humor because we see that then the mind is a little crazy. It will tell us to do one thing and we do it, like, oh, you should have a lion because you've been working too hard. And then we sleep in. And then the critical mind comes and says, well, you're just a lazy slob. You didn't even get up to do your exercise or do your morning prayer or whatever. And so when we can hold it with a little lightness, you know, there's a line I quote from Wavy Gravery says, if you don't have a sense of humor, it just ain't funny. And that's very true with our critic.
Funny,
you know, our critic is, you know, it's merciless and it's, you know, it's a lose-lose kind of situation. And if we can find a sense of humor or lightness and we don't take ourselves so seriously, then, you know, when we can laugh at something, it means we have space around something. And so it's much more tolerable or bearable.
Right. And I think a big part of this is, you know, not taking ourselves so importantly. You know, the built into all this is how important we are. Look how important I am. I disappoint people all the time. You know, I don't think we're that darn important that we're going around disappointing everyone. When we realize we're kind of nothing, you know, I don't mean that in a self-negating kind of way, but in the real sense that we're just a small part of a large thing. You know, to be nothing is to be everything, right? Because you get over yourself, you get over your individual sense of self and realize you're part and parcel of something immense and wondrous. And that doesn't really have to be critical of anything. It simply is. It embraces everything. And when you enter that's awareness, you know, life is very funny, you know, because we spend so much time creating scenarios and dramas that are really not that important.
No, it's amazing what our mind and our mental habits get up to. And you know, the more clarity, the more awareness we can bring to that, the more we actually have the chance of relieving ourselves from a lot of unnecessary pain and hardship.
Right. You mentioned, you know, one of the tools that you have is gratitude. And, of course, we emphasize that a lot. I think it was Meister Eckhart, the great Dominican mystic, who said that if you only had one prayer, and that prayer was thank you God, you know, that would suffice. And I've always liked that because you can never say thank you enough, right? Because a thank you is another, or gratitude is another miraculous way to expand. You know, once you start being grateful for things, there's no end to it because there's so much to be grateful for. Even our foibles, you know, we're grateful for them because they brought us to this place of awareness. So, you know, it shows us, as you said, our inherent value, right? That's that we are grateful for the fact we're here. Nobody else can quite be here in the same way we are. So therefore, we're grateful for that.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think gratitude is a really, I talk about this in the book, about it's a really important practice because the critic is so often looking at what's wrong, what we're not doing right, why we're deficient, why we're problematic. And gratitude is saying, oh, wait a minute, well, you know, I have this body, I have this mind, I have my senses, I have, you know, whatever I have in my resources or friends or health or safety or, you know, and it's one way, you know, of orienting the mind to the good. You know, we have this negativity bias, the hardwired orientation towards threat and what's wrong, which we needed for survival, and then we don't need it quite in the same way. And yet, the critic builds on that negativity bias, looks at all everything that's problematic, and instead we can turn our attention to the good. We can turn our attention to the positive, not ignoring the pain and suffering, difficulty, but also having a balanced perspective. And in the same way that, you know, we can be habitually look at people. We can be sitting in a cafe on a bus and we're looking out the window, and it's very easy for us just to judge every single person who walks by, judge the way they walk, the way they talk, the way they look, and we sort of get this sort of slightly perverse pleasure from it. And the problem, I mean, it's innocent in itself, but the problem with that, you know, back to the neuroplasticity, the more we strengthen that habit of judging, the more we become a judgmental person. And the most likely we'll be judging ourselves. So right. we want to be asking ourselves, do I want to become a nitpicking, negative, critical, judgmental person? Or would I rather be a person who's, you know, more positive, more appreciative, have more gratitude, can see the good in others and oneself? And that's, you know, I want to be more that person, you know, if I have the choice.
Right. I think it was Nick Arjuna Ardak that taught me to add, you know, just like me at the end of a sentence. And you do a similar technique, but you add it at the beginning of the sentence, you know. But, you know, that person is a complete idiot, just like me. Or that person is a beautiful child of God, just like me. You know, it's connecting to the commonality of things rather than separation and being critical, and to know that we're, you know, as you know, nobody is as stupid as I am. I think that's another technique I learned from him, and you have it in your book too, the technique of, or the tool of exaggeration, you know, blow it up out of proportion until it becomes ridiculous. Eventually the balloon of exaggeration will explode, you know. It's and just dwell on it, you know. Nobody's as stupid as I am. Not in the pathological sense where you're going to commit suicide because you feel terrible, but as a tool to get yourself beyond self-obsession, I think. It can work quite well, can't it?
Absolutely. You know, I think it's important that we, you know, interrupt those negatively self-obsessed patterns and, you know, bring some... You know, the awareness provides choice, right? And so we all have choice about how we work with our mind and our thoughts and our perceptions and our perspectives. And, you know, I think one of the good news I wanted to write about in the book was that, you know, we can change these negative habits and patterns. Like, I've worked with people who, you know, have had critical voices like all of us for a long time, and they sort of become part of the living room furniture. We don't even notice them. We don't notice that we're talking to ourselves negatively. And then when we start to listen and look and pay attention, we go, wow, this is really not a healthy habit, not a healthy pattern. And so we start finding, you know, there's a chapter in the book called The Critic Toolkit, and I suggest a lot of different ways and tools and techniques how we can start to recognize and interrupt and let go of some of these habits that are not so helpful. So this is the good news, is we can actually see where we're not functioning so well around our thoughts and habits, and we can find more constructive ways to be with them, you know, and, yes, and to transform them.
When I was living in Eastbourne in Britain, I'm originally from Britain, as you are, I think, and back in the late 70s, I was teaching, and I think there was a person living on my street who was also a teacher. I didn't know him very well, but used to wander up and down, and he always used to irritate me. I don't know, there was something about him, you know, some people you just get irritated with. There's no reason, it's just you just do. But and it could be because he always wore a button that said, "I don't care." I don't care. And that makes me laugh. But You know, for years I wondered about what that meant, and I don't care because initially it sounds uncaring, obviously, but you know, maybe he was making a statement too, you know, that he's not buying into, you know, enabling others and being, you know, falsely compassionate. I don't know. Any right. idea what he meant? I don't care.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, that could be. Yeah. And you know, it could go either way. It could be, you know, I don't care, like, I don't give a damn. Or,
right.
you know, I don't, you know, and that could have a sort of very sort of disdainful, uncaring, you know, or it's I don't care as in, you know, it doesn't, none of this stuff really matters that
right.
much. It could be very healthy
right.
not caring. You know, there's a beautiful line from T.S. Eliot who says, you know, teach me how to care and not to care. You know, that we care passionately, and then we also let go to the result, to the outcome, to, you know, our limited role in it. You know, I think both are true, but it's hard to know which side someone's at with that.
Well, I think what's good about it, though, is it does make you go to those both those places and begin to examine, you know, because you could initially be upset with somebody, you know, host, you should care, it's your job, you know, we're supposed to be loving people, and so that's a teaching point right there, you know. But it could be I don't care in the sense that, you know, everything's in divine order, you know, I'm footloose and fancy free, I don't have to have cares and worries about things. So yeah, anyway,
right.
it's obviously stayed with me all these years, so it was an interesting little point of opening there, I guess. So if you were to sum up mindfulness in a few words, because people love these simple answers, what would mindfulness be for you? It's sort of a definition.
Well, in two words, mindfulness is clear awareness. In a few more words, mindfulness is the capacity to be present to our experience, to our physical, emotional, mental, and environmental experience. So it's simply
right.
just knowing what's happening as it's happening, right? Nothing fancy, very ordinary, very simple human quality that we all have and we can all cultivate through attention training, through meditation, through other kinds of, you know, awareness-generating practices like art or music or you know, writing and that kind of thing. So, it's a very simple quality of awareness that allows us to know our experience as it is.
Yeah, right.
Without judgment or reactivity. Yeah.
And I think that's the beautiful thing, isn't it? It's not this bypassing we talked about earlier, you know, where we want to avoid the nasty bits and get to the nice times and everything. This is accepting whatever shows up. You know, if I'm feeling bad any given day, I'm not trying to mask it or hide it. I'm letting it be what it is. And just looking at it in that way actually frees me of it, right? So I don't have to stay stuck in that moment. I think so often the critic wants us to react negatively to stuff, you know, and stay stuck in it. And mindfulness presumably is a way of freeing ourselves from that stuck place.
Yeah, it's essentially a non-reactive awareness. So, you know, we can be present to a lot of different things. And but we often have judgments, reactions, ideas, preferences, you know, and so, you know, mindfulness initially has within it this quality of acceptance, of allowing, of just noticing what's here. And before our, you know, before our two cents, before our ideas and views and judgments come in. And so, and that's why it's so, even though it's so simple and ordinary, it's very it's more unusual in that usually we're present to something. Like, you know, try watching, you know, like an election debate without having a lot of views and judgments and opinions and reactions. Or try looking at anybody that we know without having a lot of views and ideas and reactions. And so this non-judgmental accepting awareness is actually very important sort of foundation for any healthy way of living in life, but it's easier said than done.
Easier said than done, yeah. I had Professor John Dunn on my show. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's professor of healthy mindedness and the University of Madison, Wisconsin, I think, and a lovely guy, very, very bright, very into Buddhism. He was the translator for the Dalai Lama for a number of years. But he was talking about dereification, you know, beyond the thing, going beyond the thing, identifying with the thing or the story, because that's what the critic does. You know, it takes elements and makes a thing out of it or a story out of it, and then you're stuck into that thing then. And dereification is spontaneously living without, before the critic begins to analyze and compartmentalize things. And it's the moment of freshness. I guess you could call it a moment of awakening, if you like. It's a beautiful place to be, isn't it? Gorgeous place to be.
Yeah, and it really is one of those places that I think, you know, a lot of spiritual traditions point to, this place of presence, really. This is awareness, clarity, knowing, non-reactivity, has a quality of contactfulness and connectivity and warmth in it. Definitely a beautiful quality of heart and mind that we can all access and that we can all cultivate through certain, you know, practices of mindfulness, of focusing, of prayer, of, you know, anything that allows us to really, you know, get at, you know, almost like get out of our own way in a way.
Yes, yes. You mentioned Byron Katie in the book too as one of your ways of looking. You know, she invites us to look at a thing and to see if it's true or not. You know, do we really know it's true? What would it be like if it wasn't true? And you know, the ability to disidentify from that attachment, right? To really look to see if all the things that we have made up about ourselves have any validity in truth. And often the answer is, you know, they don't, right? They're very conditional to they're like a house of cards, you know, everything's dependent on the other card. And so just one little puff can bring the whole thing down.
Right. And what I love about the reason I talk about Byron Katie's work is because she focuses on inquiry. And I think inquiry is also one of those, you know, if I'd had, you know, I talked about mindfulness and compassion being essential for working with a critic, and I'd say inquiry or investigation is the third important quality, which is, you know, inquiry is, it has us examine our experience. It has us pay attention. And, you know, especially with the critic, it's so important because we have all these thoughts, like, you know, whether it's, and self-judgments like I'm worthless or stupid or not good enough or, you know, should have done better or, you know, yada, yada, yada. And with inquiry, we take a moment and we go, wait a minute, is this true? Is this really accurate or is this a distorted self-perception? And so it's really important that we begin to look honestly at our judgments, at our mind, and to begin to question, you know, and look at, you know, not just the judgment itself, but also how much do I listen to it? How much do I believe it? How much do I give it authority? How much do I let it dictate my sense of worth or value or well-being? And one of the key pieces about the critic is, you know, there's a chapter in the book where I make this distinction between person-centered praise and process-centered praise. And, you know, in any, you know, when we're evaluating or critiquing anything, you know, it's so much healthier for us, you know, again, using this sort of inquiry to look at the kind of critique we're utilizing. And the problem with the judgment is it comes in and uses person-centered praise and maybe, like, you know, for instance, you might be running a radio show and the judge comes after and says, well, that was, you know, that wasn't a great show. That was kind of stupid, or that was, you know, could have done better. That was hopeless. But the person in praise
happens
would be,
every,
you know,
week. No, I'm just kidding.
And the process and in praise would be, you know, yeah, that conversation was good. I could see where there a couple of times we went off track, and, you know, we could have been more focused and a little more, you know, whatever, you know. And
right.
That's a healthy process-centered critique. The critic comes in and says, "Well, that was stupid. You're stupid. You're a failure.
Right. You're a piece up. Of yeah."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really important to see and bring that inquiry to look at those, you know, assumptions that get made from the critic, like, oh, you know, like trying to meditate and we're lost in thought as we often are, the critic comes in and rather than evaluating, saying, oh yeah, notice you're distracted because you've got this, you know, a lot of preoccupation about work going on, says, well, that was hopeless, or you're stupid, that was a waste of time. And so, you know, it's very debilitating when we listen to that kind of judgment and critique.
Absolutely. Folks, I've been talking with Mark Coleman. We're towards the end of the show. If you want to get the book, it's available in all the usual outlets. It's published by New World Library, an awesome publishing company called Make Peace With Your Mind. Mark, if people want to get a hold of you, they can go to markcoleman.org, right?
Yes, that's the best place, markcoleman.org. Find information about my books and teaching and retreats and consulting and all of that. So, yeah, Mark,
right.
Mark with a K, Coleman.org. Thanks.
And then the final piece of deep wisdom is provided in the last chapter where it's said to avoid criticism, say nothing, do nothing, be nothing. There we go.
Right.
So that's a surefire way of avoiding criticism, but it's also a surefire way of avoiding being fully alive as well. So, you know,
right.
In other words, just by being alive, we're open to criticism and either in or outer, and not to take that too seriously. Let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Mark. Next week, Tom Stirner comes to the show again. He's been on a number of times. He was talking about his latest book, Fully Engaged, Using the Practicing Mind in Daily Life. He was on the last time talking about his book, The Practicing Mind, and now how to use that practicing mind in daily life. Right now, though, I want to thank Mark Coleman for a lovely show. Thank you so much for being on with us today.
Thank you so much. Great talking with you.
All right. Thanks for listening, folks. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Notice how the funniest things happen when we stop taking ourselves too seriously and step out boldly? Listen to Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed as these unlikely saints administer a refreshing dose of laughter and love that will inspire you to step out boldly and experience the funniest things. Join the discussion with Daryl and Ed live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central Time on Funniest Thing, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
There is a story about a man who died and found himself at the gates of heaven. The gatekeeper offered to give him a tour. First he took him to hell. The man saw tables laden with a sumptuous banquet. "This can't be hell," he said. "Look at all this wonderful food." But as he looked closer, he noticed that all the people were weak and emaciated. They'd been given 3-foot-long forks and they couldn't get the food to their mouths. Then the gatekeeper took the man to heaven. Tables there were also piled high with a variety of wonderful foods. The people had also been given 3-foot-long forks, but looked happy and well-fed, because they were feeding each other. The point of this story is obvious. Life is more enjoyable when we help one another. Changing your thoughts and actions can result in positive changes in you and the world around you. This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org. Somewhere, tucked away in the Unity Library archives in Unity Village, Missouri, you can find a secret treasure. They are the scripts from Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore's early days on broadcast radio, the teachings of Unity's founders, almost 100 years old. Now, for the first time in history, you can hear them through the power of the Internet. Join Bob Brock every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, for Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past. Discover the wisdom of Charles Fillmore's talks and of other Unity radio speakers read on the air again. Call in your comments and questions as Bob and his special guests revisit Unity radio talks of the past, along with historical background from the early days of the Unity movement. That's Unity Classic Radio, Words from Our Past, every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world.
Does the idea of being a vegetarian or a vegan intrigue you? Is it something you've pondered? Listen each week as Victoria Moran, author of Main Street Vegan, shows you how to make the shift to a sustainable lifestyle for both you and the planet. Each week you'll learn about the latest on the vegan life. It's not just for celebrities and moguls, but for people just like you who want to look and feel amazing, eat extraordinary food, help animals, and create a physical body perfectly attuned to spiritual growth. Guests will range from Unity ministers to vegan authors, activists, physicians, chefs, and even some of those glittery celebs. There'll be recipes, ideas, tips for going vegan at your own pace, and ways to make a difference for animals and the planet at every meal. Tune in Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time for Main Street Vegan, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Tens of thousands of listeners, like you, have been transformed through the ministry of Paulette Pipe and her program, Touching the Stillness, one of the longest-running programs on Unity Online Radio. Paulette's latest album of guided meditations, Blissful Stillness, is a new and different experience. The mystical quality of her beautiful voice will reverberate through a Zen-style meditation, a mudra meditation, which are yoga hand positions to deepen your practice, and guided meditations, which we know and love. It features a new instrumental sound by Kelly Hunt with a bonus track by Kathy Zavada. Experience a blissful immersion into quiet and stillness by purchasing your own copy at shop.unityonline.org.
Blissful stillness come.
Ever notice that there might be something not quite right, but you just can't put your finger on it? We may describe it as an inner stirring, a restlessness, a yearning to find our way home to our heart and higher purpose. Some of us may feel like we are living on borrowed time, that despite our accomplishments, what was once so important to us now just feels empty and meaningless. If you find your heart longing, wanting, looking for a path home to authenticity and purpose, join us for transformation, inspiration, hope, and possibility. Move toward your higher calling. Listen to The Call of Spirit with Evelyn Foreman and tune in to Possibility every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Central Time here on Unity Online Radio.
What if you were intentional about your life, committed to having more energy and being more vibrant? Join Reverend Temple Hayes, spiritual leader of First Unity at Unity Campus in St. Petersburg, Florida, as she guides you on a journey to an intentional and energetic life. Empower your life and fully express the wondrous energy, love, and joy you hold in your wildest imagining. Joyfully and actively know that more important than what happens after you die is the deeper and enriching concern for what happens while you're living. How can you experience an incredible life right now? Learn how each week on The Intentional Spirit, Seeing and Being, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Central Time, right here on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to live in joy? Is there an area of your life where you could use a miracle? Have you been praying for help and guidance? Come join Lisa and Bill and their guests for an hour filled with practical tips on experiencing miracles, greater abundance, focused, deliberate living, and the peace of God that passeth all understanding. Experience more joy in life. Listen to Living in Joy, Reflections on A Course in Miracles with Lisa Natoli and Bill Free every Friday at 2 p.m. Central here on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
You know the saying, a good deed is its own reward? Well, moving toward a plant-based diet and vegan lifestyle is one kind and compassionate act that isn't just its own reward. It will also reward you with vibrant health, boundless energy, an easy way to keep your weight where you want it, and according to yogis and Unity's co-founder Charles Fillmore, even give a boost to your spiritual life. On Main Street Vegan, the radio program named for the popular book, Victoria Moran will make your move in a vegan direction easy, fun, affordable, and delicious. With enticing topics and entertaining guests every Wednesday at 2 p.m. Central Time, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. Does the idea of being a vegetarian or a vegan intrigue you? Is it something you've pondered? Listen each week as Victoria Moran, author of Main Street Vegan, shows you how to make the shift to a sustainable lifestyle for both you and the planet. Each week you'll learn about the latest on the vegan life. It's not just for celebrities and moguls, but for people just like you who want to look and feel amazing, eat extraordinary food, help animals, and create a physical body perfectly attuned to spiritual growth. Guests will range from Unity ministers to vegan authors, activists, physicians, chefs, and even some of those glittery celebs. There'll be recipes, ideas, tips for going vegan at your own pace, and ways to make a difference for animals and the planet at every meal. Tune in Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Central Time for Main Street Vegan, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.